Education. Education, they say, can solve all the world's problems. By leveling the playing field, it can cure economic inequality and solve poverty. By correcting ignorance, it can fix racism and sexism. By imparting good ideals, it can bolster national security, progress the economy, eliminate crime, strengthen relationships. Education, they say, is everything. And so governments pour millions and billions of dollars into their education budgets, and kids are made to stay in school longer and longer. There's a naivety in this thinking, isn't there? Because although you might teach, students don't automatically listen. Education can't fix what students won't learn. And we know that to be true. Because the foolish often don't want to be corrected. The unwise take time to change. Now, the book of Proverbs is all about education. If you look down with me at chapter 1, you can see that from its first few verses. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, for attaining wisdom and discipline, for understanding words of insight, for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life. Wisdom, instruction, understanding. This is a book that looks like a school curriculum that progresses as its chapters unfold. A curriculum designed to teach the young and the old alike how to live well in the world. But there's no naivety in this curriculum. The teachers know the realities of their students. They know that they can teach as much wisdom about the world as they want, but unless their students listen, they'll continue in their foolishness. And so these first 9 chapters of Proverbs are an extended plea. They plead with us, they beg us students who are tempted to ignore the instructions of wisdom, they warn us to instead listen and learn. So this morning we're going to need to hear carefully the urgency in this plea, because as we'll see, the decision between wisdom and folly is not about looking good or silly in front of other people. It's not even about how successful and comfortable your life might be. Ultimately, the decision between wisdom and folly is one of life or death. And so it's one that we need to listen to very carefully. Now, I don't know what you think when you hear the word wisdom. It's a fairly abstract concept. It conjures up images of everything from fortune cookies to like karate masters with their long white beards on mountaintops. Well, maybe that's just me. but I want to suggest to you that wisdom is understanding how your world works and how you can live in it for your joy and your satisfaction. In chapter 8 of Proverbs, wisdom is given a form and a voice. Wisdom is personified as a woman who speaks out. And she says, starting at verse 22, that God formed her before he had formed anything else, that she was beside him, active as a craftsman in creation at every step. It's a picture of wisdom being stitched into every layer of creation. God designing the world to work in a particular way, for people to live in it within an order that he structured and calculated. And it means that despite the chaos we might see, there is a way to live in this world, a way of wisdom, a way to live for our joy and our satisfaction. And it's this way, this creation-stitched wisdom, that is the main subject of Proverbs. If you flick back to chapter 1, you can see it there in verses 1 to 6, as the writer of Proverbs provides us with the book's purpose. The Proverbs, he writes us, are in verse 2, for learning wisdom and instruction. And in verse 3, he shows us the content of this instruction. This instruction is aimed not just at the theoretical. It's more than wisdom for the head, the wisdom of universities, the wisdom of book clubs and dinner parties. This is wisdom for the hands, for behavior, for doing what is right, what is just, and what is fair. This is righteous living. Righteousness, justice, and integrity are themes that come out throughout the book of Proverbs. And they're the foundations of wise living. But what do we need wisdom for? What can the Bible tell us about the world that we live in that we don't already know? It's tempting to think this way, and maybe you're thinking this. Maybe you're thinking that we function fine. We have a good job, or we had a good job, and now we're set up well enough. What do we need wisdom for? Our money might be secure, maybe our kids seem to be thriving, or even if none of these are true, well, at least we've learnt from our mistakes. What do we need more wisdom for? What's the Bible going to teach that you haven't already picked up for yourself? I think that's a tempting attitude to have as we come to the book of Proverbs, as we come to the start of a series on Proverbs. This again? What is this really going to teach me? This book written thousands of years ago, what does it really have to offer me? Well, the wisdom on offer here is far more than just wisdom for work and relationships and parenting. That is a part of it. It's God's wisdom that he stitched into his creation about how we can live rightly in it for our joy and our satisfaction. There's no better education, no better wisdom or knowledge to gain than these instructions given by God about the way that he made his world. So do you want this wisdom? I hope that you do. But let's say that we do want this wisdom. How do we get it? Now, my wife and I celebrated our wedding anniversary last week. We're up to 4 years, going strong. Every year we sit down together and we watch the wedding video. And we chat about what we remember and enjoyed about the day. Now, I remember at our wedding, we asked our guests to write down on pieces of paper, wisdom for us for our marriage. And one guest, I kid you not, he wrote down on 30 different pieces of paper the same piece of wisdom, the same piece of advice. Can anyone guess what it was? It was directed at me. It was, listen. Listen to your wife. From the laughs, I think we know why. Now, his enthusiasm in writing that advice may have indicated he was having trouble in that particular area at that time, but those words have stuck with me ever since. Because I don't like listening. It's hard work. It involves patience, clarifying what you're hearing, seeking explanations, broadening those things out to apply to many other things. But it's hard work. I just saw a few wives look at their husbands. That's great. It's hard work because listening to one voice means ignoring another. The one thing that's repeated over and over again in these first 9 chapters of Proverbs is the command to listen. Listen and listen closely, the writer says. Listen to the wisdom that's going to come in chapters 10 to 31. You can see one example there that we had read out in chapter 1, verse 8. Listen, my son, to your father's instruction and do not forsake your mother's instruction. It's framed as a father speaking and instructing his child. Readers are told to listen and not forsake their parents' teaching. And then the writer increases the urgency of this call at the beginning of chapter 2. He says, accept my words, store up my commands, turn your ear to wisdom, cry aloud for understanding, search for it as for a hidden treasure. Now, the reason for this urgency involves a comparison. He says, listen to my words because there is another voice, a competing voice that calls alongside wisdom for you to listen. And it's the voice the call of folly. The writer gives these two opposing voices, form and flesh, two women whom in chapter 9 stand each at their houses and call for those who come past to enter their houses and eat with them. And these two women represent the two calls made to all of us. The call to join and eat with wisdom and the call to join and eat with folly. And folly is described in this vivid detail. You can see it in chapter 5 and chapter 7, but in chapter 5, verse 3, her words are dripping with honey. Her speech is smoother than oil. And in chapter 7, the writer leaves nothing to the imagination about this woman. The woman representing folly comes out in verse 10, dressed like a prostitute. In verse 13, she takes hold of the young man and kisses him and says in verse 15, I looked for you and have found you. I have covered my bed with colored linens from Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh and aloes and cinnamon. Come, let us drink deeply of love till morning. Let's enjoy ourselves with love. And the picture here is rich. It's vivid. It's a scantily clad woman, a bed prepared and richly scented, and a proposal for a full night of lovemaking. She's the symbol of all things that are beautiful to the eye and seem pleasurable to eat. The writer's drawing straight from erotic fantasy to show the deep allure of this woman. There are sights, there are smells, there's a promise of full and lasting taste. But notice in verse 21 of chapter 7, it is with her words and her smooth talk that the young man is led away and seduced. It's in response to her words that he all at once, in verse 22, goes to follow her. Don't miss what's happening here. The writer of Proverbs isn't giving a specific warning about the temptation of adultery. No, this is a rich picture of the voice of folly. The voice that calls to us, that calls us away from wisdom. This richly seductive picture captures the severe temptation we face to abandon living the way that God intended. Now, most Sundays I lead at our Engage High Schoolers service, and I take care of this great group of year 10 to 12 boys. Over the past 4 weeks, we've been looking at the topic of sex and sexuality. The first thing that our growth group did, our Bible study did on this topic, was brainstorm what their friends and the media that they listen to are saying on this topic. And this is what they came up with. They said that this is what their friends and media are saying. They hear that sex is an accomplishment, an achievement to be bragged about. Who lost their virginity first? Who's had sex with the most people? They hear that in relationships, sex is always the goal. It's that climactic moment in TV and movies. The only way to show true love to the one that you love. They hear that for guys their age, pornography is normal. It's good. And that there should be no shame about it. And these are strong and powerful voices. And the Bible's wisdom that sex is a dangerous but good gift from God designed for marriage is hard to swallow. The immediate pleasure presented by the world seems much more attractive than the more complex and long-term minded wisdom of God. Now, it doesn't take much time to think about the same kinds of voices in our life. Our friends, our media, our world gives us similar messages about how we should live. And they're rich and powerful voices. But as often as they come from outside us, they come from within as well. Our hearts, bent inwards towards ourselves, push against righteousness and integrity for the sake of ourselves. For me, I was often tempted in my workplace to cut corners, to bill clients for more work than I'd done just to get my own hours up, so I could impress others, get elevated in my job. My desire for excellence and power at work would shout against wisdom's call to integrity. What voices are calling to you? Where is it that you're being tempted not to follow God's way, His wisdom? Maybe it relates to sex, or maybe to money, to your integrity at work, or to your relationships at home. The Bible isn't naive about these voices. It knows how tempting they are. Like a barely dressed lady taking hold of an impulsive young man, these voices pull on us. And we need to be realistic about our own hearts. None of us really enjoy listening to wisdom. We'd much rather listen to those voices that don't demand change, those voices that invite us to enjoy ourselves. What will make us listen? Well, according to chapter 1, verse 7, the key to getting this wisdom is the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Why? Because the two women call us to two very different paths that have two very different endpoints. So I'm high up in the South American mountain range. I'm stretched out over the ledge, the ground plunging hundreds of feet below me. Desperately, I'm trying to pull up this lady who's just moments before slipped and now hangs dropping down to her death. How did I get there? Well, I'm on a mission trip in Bolivia, visiting remote villages. I'm bringing medical aid along with the gospel. And in this village, it didn't go to plan. Overnight, it rained a lot. And suddenly, the small stream that we'd crossed to get into the village became this raging river. And we were stranded in this small Bolivian town with no food. But there was one family in the town who offered to feed us. But it said we'd have to head on this two-hour hike to his farm to get that food. So we set off, and he leads us on this path straight up the mountainside. Until we're walking on this little path pressed up against the side of the mountain. It's like that one of those scenes from a movie, like Lord of the Rings, kind of like dangerously scary things. I think you'd never expect yourself to be in. And there was like these breaks along the path sometime. We had to like jump across. It was hectic. Which is when this moment happens. The lady in front of me, she slips on a loose stone, and I stretch out and I barely manage to grab her. And the suit hides it well, but I'm not very strong, so I can't pull her up. So I'm leaning over there. I'm just holding on to her as she's falling, as she's leaning down there, hanging down there. This guy on the other side of her comes back and grabs her, and together we pull her up. It's the craziest, most adrenaline-filled moment of my life. But after resting a while, we continue on. We come down the other side and eventually make it to flat ground and to this farm. We take our food, these massive bags of bread, potatoes, corn, I'm talking like a 20-kilogram sack, and we heft it onto our backs. And I stop and think for a moment. Hang on. We barely made it alive without 20 kilograms of potatoes on our back. What on earth are we going to do carrying these sacks on the way out? Surely all that waits for us along that path is death. Well, the man turns to me and he says, "Oh, don't worry. We'll go back along the river. I just took you the scenic route." Unbelievable, hey? Two paths, one leading to certain death as me and my sack of potatoes plunge inevitably to the valley floor, and one safe, if a bit more boring, but leading securely to life and well-being. This is the picture of Proverbs 1-9, albeit with less potatoes. Because there are two paths that are described in these chapters. There's the crooked path of the wicked and the evildoer, and that's the path to which folly calls her students. And there is the path of the righteous and peace to which wisdom calls her students. Two paths with two results. Now, if we continued reading past the description of the adulterer in chapter 7, we'll see the end result of following folly along her path. Verse 22 of chapter 7. "All at once he followed her like an ox going to the slaughter, like a deer stepping into a noose till an arrow pierces his liver, like a bird darting into a snare, little knowing it will cost him his life." Well, having been vivid in his description of the temptations that we will face to join this path of wicked, or the path of the wicked, the writer is now vivid in his description of the outcome of joining that path. Like an animal in a trap, death is the end. In fact, the writer emphasizes even more in chapter 9 as those two women call and invite passerbys into their homes to eat. We see that those who enter the home of wisdom are promised life. But those who enter with folly find, and it's painted so vividly, in verse 18, little do they know that the dead are there in the house of folly, that her guests are in the depths of the grave. Again, this is strong and vivid language. Proverbs is teaching us that walking the path of wisdom is more than securing long-term benefits. It's about more than being rich and happy, about finding joy and pleasure, but ultimately, it's about securing life and avoiding destruction. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, because when we fear the Lord, we'll know that it's the Lord who directs the wise to life and the fool to death. Because it's the Lord who hates evil, who hates the way of folly, the Lord who brings calamity and destruction on the fool. The writer says that in light of this promised end, we need to listen to his instruction, ignore the tempting call of folly, and instead wrestle with, struggle with wisdom. We need to stay on her path, or else we'll be dragged down to dine with guests who are already deep in the realm of the dead. What voices are you listening to? What voices pull you from the path of wisdom and righteous living? A book of Proverbs is not just about handy tips. It's not a way to get an upgrade on your spiritual life. The wisdom of Proverbs is a matter of life and death, because it reveals whether or not we're listening to God. Now, Jesus comes in the New Testament as the ultimate teacher of what is wise and what is foolish. And we heard it read in the gospel reading from Matthew 7 that Jesus provides two options: a wise life built on rock, or a foolish life built on sand. One leads to life and prosperity, the other to calamity and destruction, as the rain and the waves come and wash that away that with poor foundation. And I wonder if you noticed in verses 24 and 26 that it's the one who hears the words of Jesus and puts them into practice who is wise. The one who hears the words of Jesus and yet doesn't put them into practice who is foolish. It's again all about hearing and listening. Your folly before God is ultimately going to be decided on whether you've listened to Jesus. So don't be a fool. Listen to the powerful God who designed and created all things, who designed them to work in line with his order, his wisdom. Listen to the Son who calls you to repent of your folly of rejecting the Creator and instead to be wise, to live the way of righteousness, to believe that he, that Jesus, is the King, the one who died for the sake of your foolishness and rose that you might have life. And I say that education is everything. And to some degree, that's true. God has stitched this world together in a certain way that we might live in it to our joy and our satisfaction. But don't be naive. Recognize the voices that pull against us, that direct us not to the ways of wisdom, that direct us away from righteousness, justice, and integrity, and instead direct us to wickedness and evil. Reflect seriously and ask, are you listening to God's wisdom? Are you listening to the wisdom he has for this world and ultimately the wisdom he has given us in his Son? Fear the Lord. Know that he directs the wise to life and the foolish to death. Don't be a fool, but struggle earnestly with his wisdom and listen first to his Son.